Hello, I'm Tim Elliott, and welcome to Outsiders, my brand new podcast project. So I believe there's an outsider in all of us. And in this podcast, we explore how being an outsider, spending time in, moving through nature, challenges us and changes us for the better. And today, we have a very special guest, my first guest, actually, on this new project. His name is Graham Oxford. Graham, introduce Hello. Yourself and who you are and what you do and all that good stuff.
It could take quite a while. I'll do this succinct one. My name is Graham Watson. I am, I guess, an ultra runner and founder of Raw Porridge and a family man, scout leader, generally happier outdoors.
Generally a happier outdoors. I think that is it. And in this podcast, we explore that very thing, right? Spending time in the great outdoors, how we move through nature, how we appreciate it, how it catalyzes positive change in us, and how that this story and our story of how we do that sort of thing can help other people find this thing. So you mentioned there you're an ultra runner, which is kind of how I met you, I think, back in the day.
It was.
So tell us how you got into that thing. Have you always been an outsider? Have you always been an ultra runner?
I've always been what you might term an outsider. I enjoyed scouts when I was younger. And I spent, to my memory, I spent a lot of time outside cycling, hiking. My parents were keen hikers, so we used to spend quite a lot of time in the Lake Districts and the Yorkshire Dales. All my holidays were spent outdoors, either in streams, on fells, in woods, rivers. So I guess I harbored a love for being outdoors and really the kind of positive that brings to your life. And how did I get into ultra running? So I guess I've always been a really casual, occasional weekend warrior. You know, the odd park run, the odd random jog, the odd attempt at becoming what you might term a runner, never really stuck. And then lockdown happened, and I had a lot of free time on my hands. So here's a weird connection. So I started doing Qigong with a guy called Mark Shaler online. I think we met on there as well. Very randomly one morning, got up, saw that he was going live. Didn't know too much about Mark, to be honest. I'd followed him through his efforts and sustainability and stuff. I think I'd added him on Instagram. And I thought, oh, this looks quite interesting. Started doing Qigong. And he was always outdoors. So I started doing it outdoors. And then one day, a lady called Faith McAllister, who's a yoga teacher in London, said that she jogged basically 5 kilometres to do Qigong at some woods. So that sounds quite good fun, doing it outside. Why not do it somewhere else other than the house? Get outside. Get out for half an hour since it's cheap and good. And so I thought, that'd be nice, but like 5K is a bit of a way to then do Qigong. So I did it once. And Mark, at that time, was doing Qigong every day. And I thought, another friend of mine, our daughter's boyfriend's dad used to run 5K every day. That was a mentally hard thing to do. And
every day.
I was like, wow, imagine that. And I suddenly realised it was not belittling his efforts. It was a lot easier than I thought. And so the next day I got up and very slowly jogged 5K to Qigong with a buggy, with our little lad, who at the time was about 1.5 years old, in a buggy.
How long ago?
Yeah, crazy. I know. So I started doing that every day with him in the buggy. And it became a real thing for bonding between us. So I could take him to the outdoors. He sort of had a snack and sort of stared at the trees, and I flapped my arms around for 45 minutes and then jogged back. And it stuck as a habit. We started doing it every day. And one day I thought, let's go a little bit longer. Let's go crazy and do 10 kilometres. And jogged 5 kilometres out to do Qigong and jogged 5K back. And so on and so forth. And it started going longer and longer. And then a chap called Matt Bagwell, who was also friends with Mark, started doing breath work. And I joined that. And he was quite a seasoned triathlete and runner. And he then said that he was going to do this. I can't remember what happened. He lost his job or was out of work through lockdown or something. and he had this crazy idea. He was going to basically try and raise a huge amount of money for Khan. Matt's got his own backstory, which he's not afraid to talk about in terms of suicide attempt, and sort of wanted to raise a lot of money for Calm, and so he was going to run an ultra marathon every day. So never mind running 5K every day. This guy was going to run an ultra marathon every day for a month and raise a stupidly high amount of cash, which he did. And we became really good friends through that, really got on with him. And he said, look, you run a lot each day. How do you fancy joining me on one of these legs? And I think at the time I joined him for like for half of one of them initially. And he said, oh, you run raw porridge. Why don't you sponsor a leg? Why don't you sponsor one of these runs? Right. And I sent him some porridge. He got hooked on it and said, I'm going to use it every day to fuel these ultramarathons because it really works. And I want you to sponsor one of these. And we did. And I thought, I can't sponsor one of the ultramarathons and not do it. So I thought, just give it a go. And I joined him on half of one of them and then thought, we're sort of whipped out by doing half. And I thought, I've got to do a full one. And Alice, my other half, basically did a couch to ultramarathon, skipped the couch to 5K and just went couch to ultramarathon and did an ultramarathon before me, which riled me. And so
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, she did one before me. I was like, right, that is it.
Congrats, Alice.
So that's how it became. I basically got hooked on it and did that with him and thought it was basically just how far can you go and how much can you eat? And I became hooked on that feeling of going a long way. And I can't, and if you don't run ultramarathons, you don't run marathons. It's quite hard to explain. But there's a feeling you get after you finish, isn't there? It's just this both fulfillment and there's a joy in some sort of hollowness, some emptiness of like you've just depleted everything that you can do. And yeah, it's a hard feeling to explain, but it's addictive. It's very addictive.
There is something. There's a load I want to unpack over this conversation in that around the knockdown and Mr. Shaler and Mr. Bagwell, because I think they must be responsible for a whole bunch of people getting into this thing that we now do.
Yeah, a lot of people, and I don't think people like Faith McAllister would have any idea that her random jog to Qigong sparked me to do a 5K, which then got me into the running in the first place. And whether I'd have still done it without that, I don't know. I probably would, but that was
I mean, we'll unpack those in a second. That if you've listened to the previous episode where I was on my own, you will understand that was very much the same thing for me, as we've alluded to. But I think that there's something around being a scout and kind of young people's access to nature I'd like to discuss. And like, where kind of raw and ultramarathon kind of affect with a challenge and the positive tension. But let's go back to the beginning where it started for us at this weird lockdown time, if people remember it, I presume you will. Surprising number of years ago.
Terrifying.
Yeah, but time is a funny thing when you're a long distance runner. It doesn't really work in the same way. I think it's ruined it for me. I'm like, it's only 6 hours.
That's fine.
I can normal jog.
I'm like, I'm going to go for 5K, but I'm going to make it last an hour and a half.
It was a big catalyst of everything changed there. Like, my life changed ridiculously there. I entered that period of time having just resigned from a CMO role in an investment bank, investment company, and then was looking to start again the following year, like just after the new year, and then obviously the COVID came. But at that point I was 17 and a half stone. I enjoyed walking to the pub, but the pub was the point, right, let's say. And I used to run for schools when I was at school. I'm definitely not at school. That was 30 years ago, but like the mile and stuff. But in lockdown, I started running again, because in that little group of people that we were needed to, the people who attended Mark's thing, and he did a really good community thing. Like every Monday morning, he met And there was a little talk. I think it was, I want to call it the communion, but that might be wrong.
It was called the communion. Yeah.
But, like, honestly, that guy was responsible for some good stuff in that time, let's say. So well done, Mark, if you ever listen to this. But there was a good people in there, like Graham was in there, P.T. Nicky McGill.
Sarah Baylish.
Sarah Baylish, the nutritionist, was in there, Matt Bagwell. Like, loads of good people who are, like, I luckily know now. I get to call my friends and go for with sometimes. I don't run with Nicky McGill because she's miles away.
It's a long way away.
But otherwise. But there was times there, and they put the idea of running again into my mind. And it was, in that period of time, I started Qigong daily. I started yoga daily. I started breath work. I started running again and moving again. And by the time Matt Bagwell did his thing, it was called Run the Country Ultra. I'll put the website in the show notes for people to check. It's still live. It's still going. It's still a community. It still ties a lot of people together. But there's the full story on there, and it's really good. Worth checking out. I started to, like, train for that at two, and I couldn't make the 5K loop around my house without walking. Like, and I was going, like, it can't be this bad. Like, that's not really a hill. That's a bridge, but you don't count that as a hill. Like, and it's, and I reached out to PG Nicky McGill. I went, what the flipping hell's going on? Why can't I run this 5K loop? I could definitely run a 5K loop. And she was just like, oh, just run slower. Just be more tortoise. Just run slower. I was like, just run slower.
What? Just run slower.
And was like, oh, and that's much better.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And like, nothing hurts anymore. Amazing. Yeah. And that catalyzed into very much the same thing.
Yeah.
Of joining Matt Bagwell's training sessions and running a half marathon when I'd only done a 10K before. And then joining him on two of his actual legs and doing a 20-mile with a dodgy knee, which I shouldn't probably have done, but, you know, ultra running does that to you. And then a full ultra on, again, Mark Shaler's leg 17, I think I was.
Right.
17 and 21 I did with him on the thing. He did them all, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll speak to him at some point about that thing.
Yeah.
But that community was such a, and that coming together at that time, there's some, I don't know, mystical universe thing that brought all these weird connections together into Mark's Instagram and Matt Bagwell's Instagram world.
I see.
Out of all of the people, right, that had such a positive effect. I mean, people still, we still do breathwork every Sunday on the back of that, right?
Yep.
What an incredible circumstance that's catalyzed so much positive change, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think they, as you say, the catalyst is a good word. I think both of them are fantastic catalysts for ideas and really succeeding in those ideas. Mark's a great one, isn't he, for that self-belief, that self-confidence that it's possible to do something. I mean, he was one of the founding partners of Do Lectures as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in his bones to lift people and elevate them.
And it did that. And I think it's magic. And every time I have to tell somebody about it, like, I go, Jesus, that was, like, that does not happen usually. That was a special moment in time.
If
it was in a pandemic.
If I hadn't have joined that live that day, we wouldn't be having this chat. I wouldn't have done those things. Yeah. I probably wouldn't be this fit. I wouldn't have been running up Snowdon. None of this. Quite soon.
We will come to Snowdon, but I think I wonder what, if you think there are any takeaways for people who have affinity with our beginning story of not quite being there, but having, you know, maybe having intention now in there, but having a lot of hurdles to it. That, like, what did we learn from that time? That were good steps we can take. That are the things that people can seek out.
I've thought about this a lot. For me, it's what I would term it's a James Clear reference of habit stacking. And so I would say my advice to anyone wanting or having the intention to do it and not really knowing how to get it off the ground is stack it with another habit. And what I mean with that is it doesn't really matter if you run initially. Getting up at, for example, 6:30, putting on your trainers, filling a water bottle, getting out the door, walking around the block, coming back in, do that each day or every other day for a couple of weeks and do nothing else. And then once you got used to that, do the same thing, get out, walk around the block, and then jog around the block once, and then come back in, do that for 2 weeks. And essentially build on those habits. What I learned from it is the habit of doing Qigong each day led to the habit of jogging to Qigong each day, which led to the habit of jogging back each day. And then it just became tagging on more and more. Now, if I'd had a plan, I probably wouldn't have followed it. But stacking stuff on top of an existing habit is kind of the way to go. So if you normally get up and have a glass of water. If you normally get up, have a glass of water, get up, have a glass of water, put your trainers on, start stacking those habits up, build it from there. And it becomes easy because every little step is just a tiny bit more and a little bit more. And eventually it's only a half marathon today, and eventually it's only a 32K, and then it's only a marathon. And it sounds implausible, but each of those steps, the further you go, the more you do, the less daunting each of those steps seem.
Yeah, I resonate with that. That hits me in places where I know. But like, because I was swearing blind to my wife, my like people and thing, that there was a point in that running journey. Yeah. Kicked off by them, that it was physically and medically impossible for me to run more than 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's dangerous for my health.
Yeah.
Like, run more than 60 minutes until that day when I didn't.
Yeah.
When I went a bit further, I went, I'm not dead.
I'm not dead.
No, that's mine. Like, and then going, well, I wonder, and then the curiosity happens of going, oh, well, I spent a long time thinking 10K was the absolute human limit of potential.
Yeah.
And then going 13K, and then going, well, hold on a second.
I've done that very far. Never been. Yeah.
That's not very far from 16K, which is about 10 miles. And 10 miles, and running past places I'd used to drive to.
Exactly. Going, yeah.
Drive here. Like, in the car. Like, loads of little things that stack, like that, that build your confidence. It's like that habit stacking, right? It's that behavior stacking where you go, oh, actually, now I know that I've stacked all this stuff underneath and can carry on, right? And it developed into, I think it's that people can do. If you practice positive behaviors on getting outside and moving in the outside, whether it's walking, running, cycling, roller skating. How else do you get around? Scootering,
space hopper.
Space hopper would be amazing. Space hoppering, like, practice it. It's a practice, right? It's doing it bit by bit.
The bit by bit is interesting, and it for me, it's very much like when you stretch a muscle out. And you do the initial stretch, and then you over-tense it for 10 seconds, and then you relax it, and then you can go a little bit further with the muscle. If you've ever been for sports massage, you kind of that thing where they tense, and then they relax, and then the muscle goes a little bit further. It wasn't possible for that muscle to go that far, but by kind of stretching it a little bit, you can go a little bit further again, and then a little bit further again. And it just, you know, that muscle and the muscle memory in the brain, the brain's not very good at going, you know, big leaps, big jumps, big changes very quickly, but it's more than comfortable in just being stretched a little bit each time. And that would be my advice. Just don't overstress it. Go slowly, as Peter Nicky McGill says, and just do a little bit more.
That's it. Like my running mantra for when things get difficult on the longer runs, I learned in that day, which was slow is smooth, smooth is good.
Like it.
Like I just go slow and smooth, smooth is good, and still my brain shuts up again and I can carry on and enjoy the the run. Everybody going through that, right? I think.
But the slow thing is the key, and Nicky McGill is, again, we've mentioned her a few times, has to be credited with that. Alice absolutely loves her and has credited her for that ability to be able to go further by just going slower. If you want to go further, go slower. Like, I'm not being funny, but virtually no one listening to this is going to be troubling the podium at a major event, right?
No.
And so until that time comes, if you want to do that, then, you know, sod it. Just go slowly, because no one cares if you come fourth or 400th. No, literally no one cares.
Nobody cares.
And but you might, but nobody else cares. And I think the sooner people realize that no one cares about you running, then just don't worry about it. Go slower. Make it like, why wouldn't you want to enjoy it? Go slower. Yeah. You don't want to be in pain.
No. Like, and there's loads of good quotes that are knocking around, like, nobody cares about your Strava more than you do. Like a 5K run is still a 5K run.
Yeah.
No matter the speed. Like, you've still done the same thing. It's still the same result.
I commented on the Trans Gran Canaria race at the weekend, yes. And there was the chap, forgotten his name, which is bad, but who came in last in that race, and the crew had stayed for as long as it took to give him the full beans celebration, the maracas, the music, the full gang. That guy had been, I don't know how long, but he must have been running for well over 24 hours, right? Now, you know, Tom Evans and people finished that comfortably in 15 hours.
Yeah.
Right. And
I think the winner was around 13, wasn't he?
The male 13 was about 13 hours, right? I think so, which is still a long time, but lots of marathons, there's people doing sub 2 hours. It's not a long time to be running 2 hours. Like 24 hours is a really long time to be running. That guy had been running for 24 hours. There's not many professional athletes that could do that.
No.
And it doesn't matter how effectively slow he was. He was running for 24 hours.
And that's it. Like, it's in the... You very rarely encounter anything in life you need to do for 24 hours, but outside of breathing.
Yeah, look, yeah, but even that is not conscious for most of it.
Yeah, you know, the challenge and the difficulty that he did that is incredible.
It's a bit of the metabolic output is huge for that. If you look at someone's metabolic output for a 24-hour run, it is way more than the winner, way higher.
That's it, isn't it? I think it's, I mean, and that's what makes this kind of ultra running scene, this trail running scene, such an amazing thing. Because that story you told about Trans Gran Canaria isn't the only race I've heard that story about. Like, we I have a friend called Charlie who lives in Chamonix, as we know, because we've met him there. And the big, if you don't know about UTMB, folks, Google UTMB. But when UTMB happens in Chamonix, his favourite time is hanging around between 40 and 46 hours to see the people who've been out there for 46 hours honking themselves up and down a mountain.
Yeah.
Like, with the dread of being, there's a thing called cut-off times, that extra pressure of going, oh my God. Like, the front people do not care about time. No. Like, they are not pressured by, oh my God, I'm going to be too late. Like, they're going to shut the whole race if I don't hurry up. Like, the whole extra set of pressure, he says, those people who have been coming in and have, you know, looked like they've been to war.
You
know, it's 46 hours now. Like, he says that they're the best thing. That's the best community feel. Yeah, people support the elite winners who are like Courtney DeWalter, who is just the most ridiculous runner on the planet. And people like Tom Evans and Jim Walmsley, but you kind of expect them to be good and be at the front. Not to belittle their achievement.
No.
It's expected.
Yeah.
But these people who, you know, by a sheer force of will, I mean, you have to be quite a good runner to qualify for UTMB. They don't just let.
Oh, look, it's like any old Tom, Dick, and Harry.
But still, the polarization, people can finish 23 hours after the leader. 23 hours after the leader.
which is more than it takes some of the winners to win that race in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, going under 24 hours is like a high achievement at the UTMB. And this is an extra 23 hours.
Yeah.
Like another day.
On top of that. It's like turning around at the end of winning that race and going, I'm going to run back again.
Actually, yeah. I forgot something at Thursday station. I'm just popping back.
Get it back. Yeah.
But like, it's that feeling, right, of everybody getting behind everybody. And I've not. Like, I used to play football and I used to play squash and I was in, like, athletics for a period when I was young. So, but there's no sport I've either observed or participated in or that people are so supportive of everybody. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
I don't know if saying it's not competitive is the right thing, but...
Well, it's not about this. The competition is very different, isn't it? It's not like many races where there's a limited number of competitors and it is genuinely competitive. If there's five, six, like in Parkrun, and sort of our local Parkrun frequently attracts 400 to 500 people, you're not competing with our whole field. You're largely competing with whatever your own set of beliefs and targets are, which might be, they might exist, they might not exist. And it might be beating the person in front of you, it might be beating you. Your dad's time, it might have beaten your last time, it might have beaten your partner's time, whatever. But those targets, they're not, what I'm trying to say, they're not public targets. They're in your head.
Yes. Like I said, they only matter to you more than anybody else.
Yeah, completely. And victory is really, I said, I think I commented on that Trans Gran Canary thing on their feed, just saying that glory is in realizing a dream, not necessarily winning, and that could mean getting round that marathon course, getting round the UTMB course, might be finishing a 10K, but that feeling of victory is in realizing your ambition.
This is it, right? I think what's running has taught me what's possible, like where my limits are and how to gently jog past them. That's a lesson in everything. Now I questioned every limit that I thought I knew, that I was like, what do you mean I can't do that? Because like 2 years ago I couldn't run 5K without walking, and now I could probably knock out 50K if you asked me to.
Yeah.
Without really thinking about it. Without it, just because it's a practice and you know you can achieve it. But I think, I mean, we'll get into unpacking ultras, I think, in a second. But
yeah,
because we've had chats before on our runs, actually, haven't we? And through Raw, which we'll end by unpacking Raw, I think. But how can we create trail running and ultra running becoming accessible? Like, and I think it is probably one of the most accessible sports, despite its mountainous kind of outfit that it wears, an impression. Like, like if you Google ultra running, it will show you the most aggressive version of that sport. Like running up and down Mont Blanc, which is, you know, the most aggressive version. Like in the rain, maybe standing in a bog, which, you know, for people who listen to this podcast, it's just rained for 3 months in the UK, so that's technically all of the trails.
That was my experience today. Yeah.
So it's not so much trail running anymore, more wading and then running back to the car.
Neil Frankel, a friend of ours, calls it bog bothering.
pock bothering is the official name for it.
Correct.
So for people who are, you know, looking for a reason to move, to start trail running, to get outside more, right? And the trail running and ultra running seems to, I know I'm in that sphere,
yeah,
seems to have taken on a new popularity or awareness. Yeah. I think it seems to be growing a lot. Yeah. So it's feasible that people might want to start their ultra. As people, as somebody who's come from not being an ultra runner and not being a pro athlete to now being an ultra runner, like what are the stages? What's the allure, the reason for doing it for you? And what have been the, do you think people need, what are the stages people need to go through?
I don't know. I'm kind of a believer in just getting on with it and doing it. As long as you're medically fit, I would add.
We are doctors, just caveat in there.
Do you know what I mean? I, like, if you keel over, I didn't tell you to do it. No. But but I would say that you are infinitely more capable than you imagine, and your single biggest limiting factor is your own head, inside your own head. And because it seems inconceivable doesn't mean that it's not possible, basically. The stages to go through, I think we touched on it earlier on, just get out there and start. Just start. Don't think about what you need to do. Just start. But don't do too much too soon. But you don't need to be limited by that distance. Like, you know, they talk about the 10% rule. I'm pretty sure Alice threw that completely out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, I never stood to that.
There is an injury risk factor with not sticking to it, but there's an injury risk factor with sticking to it. But if you want to, even, you know, if you're reasonably fit, enter a half marathon. Just do it. Go very, very slowly. And once you've done a half, if you can do a half marathon, you can do a full marathon. If you want to do full marathons regularly, then it's a different kettle of fish. Might be worth getting a coach, staying injury free, training blocks. It gets a little bit more complicated if you want to do lots and lots and lots of them, right? But if you just want to get out and do one, but go slower than you ever think. If you're not embarrassed by how slow you're going, you're almost definitely going too quickly.
Exactly, exactly. I got a coach at one point because I wanted to do more and more ultras and started to get into it and to learn what I was doing wrong.
Yeah, and that's it. If you want to stay injury-free and fit for a long time, there is a bit of science behind it.
But there's a, you know, it's like anything. You can peel back the layers of that onion. But
yeah.
But the training advice that I give to a lot of people who, like, mm-hmm. I know in my community that want to start going, I don't know how you run for 6 hours. And I'm like, I tell you how I started running for 6 hours. I ran for 20 minutes, walked for 10 minutes.
Right. 20 minutes, okay. Yeah.
For 10 minutes.
So a friend of mine, Raoul, talks about that, and it's called Jeffing, isn't it?
Oh, the other name. With Jefferson, it's great.
He's a bloke. He's a bloke. Jefferson or something. I mean, sadly, it's pretty much always a bloke. But it's Jeffing, I think it's called. Yeah. And yeah, walk for 5K, run for 5K. Like,
what,
I never
feel
twice.
Like...
Oh, yeah, you'll go a lot further.
And I did the farthest I've ever run in one session was 64 miles in one day. And did it in, I think it was just under 10 hours, but I did it going running for 2 hours, walking for 20 minutes, which sounds extreme, but I had practiced, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I just went, keep going until you can't keep going.
Until you can't.
And do you know what? I finished because I was soaked through on my third set of clothes because it was particularly rainy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. Not because I can't do it. I was like, I've run out of clothes.
I'm bored. I'm bored of doing this now.
Yeah. I'm going to go sit in a pub and wait for the Uber to pick me up. But it was, but actually it was all right.
It was all right.
Walk.
Walk. There's nothing wrong with walking. It doesn't mean that you're not a runner if you walk.
No, not at all. And you will see, like, when I learn And even when we went did the Run the Country Ultra, there is definitely a rule or an unwritten rule of walk the hills, fight for the hills. Like, don't run up them because you've got to run for another 9 hours. Let's not waste.
trainers run up hills. If you want to compete, then the hills are where all of those runs are won and lost, right? But if you don't want to compete and you don't want to win, then why are you running the hills to win? To win what? You're just going to wear yourself out. And it's like again, we'll get on to like the Snowdon race, but walking up to the first summit will add 45 minutes at best onto your time.
Which is,
not a lot if you're running for 12 hours. And the difference to your... not so much your fitness, but your ability will be huge.
Yeah.
All right. And so there's no shame in doing that. And again, if you look at Courtney DeWalter on that Trans Gran Canaria at times, walking with her hands on her legs for stability, going up some of those steep paths or using poles. And again, the guy who finished last at Trans Gran Canaria, no, it was a Norwegian chap, I think, called Andre Lockoe. You know, walking in to the finish of that finish was no less grand, no less celebrated, was no less an achievement. He still got a medal, he got that buckle. He will always say that he did Trans Gran Canaria. No one's going to go, but he did walk that last bit, didn't you?
Like, no, but yeah, that's not a thing. Like, it's such a great, like, community feel and such a supportive thing for doing that. And there's no...
It's lovely.
Like, nobody cares about your pace.
No one cares about your pace. And trail running is that. It's there's a massive difference in road running, which is all about pace, splits and everything else, and trail running, which is just the most wonderfully inviting community. And again, if it wasn't for Matt Bagwell, I would not have a love for this sport. He made that ultra run that I first did so accessible, so inviting. There was never a sense that I was not worthy, holding him up at any point. It was, he made it okay no matter what happened. And just by doing that, by creating that kind of environment, that kind of wraparound, that kind of like virtual hug, it just became like, this is fine. Just we'll finish it together and we'll do this.
I had a similar experience with Matt, and we will try and get him on the pod to tell his story himself, but like I remember at around I don't know, it must have been around 20 miles or something on one of the ones that we did. It was boiling hot. I was about having a nice time. You do not occasionally not have a nice time. I mean, these things.
I mean, massively. I mean, yeah, big chunks of it, but
you know, like he ran back having done already 20 ultra marathons that month. Mm-hmm. I went, are you all right? Jump into it.
Yes.
The room with the kid going. I was like, what are you doing? Like, just leave me here. Like, do your own thing. Like, I'll be fine. I know where I am geographically. I can get a taxi. It was like, don't be ridiculous. We've got like 8K left. Come on.
you can definitely make it. Like,
yeah, you can definitely make it. And like, that was just the best introduction into it, but a kind of behavior and a kind of ethos and a kind of empathy that is echoed throughout this community.
So I think that is missing a lot in competitions that people enter, that spirit of making sure that the people who are coming last feel just as worthy. And it happens on those big races, right? But a lot of everyday things, people feel a pressure.
Yeah.
And there shouldn't be. There need to be more races where actually it's all about being as slow as possible and staying together.
And you know, that's one of the things why I've started this podcast, right? Because the things I've learned becoming an outsider, like doing this change, the positive changes of not just changed me in terms of being a runner.
Yeah.
Like it's personal development, right? It ripple effects out. You become more connected, more disconnected, more empathetic. You become like more still, I've found. Like, not worrying about pace or speed is a thing in life. And I'm not late. Like, I'm not behind on deadlines or anything. But there's definitely lessons that connect this world of running to other. And I think one of those, actually, that I want to ask you about as we're getting towards the end is challenge. So you mentioned that you are now ultra running, and you've alluded to you've got one coming up in, when is it, May?
May,
which is UTMB Snowdon.
Yep.
But what is it about, like, I have an idea in my head, and this is me thinking out loud and seeing if anybody else has this idea, if I'm honest. Like, about the positive benefits of challenge. I think if people choose to do things, like, difficult in context of their life, not in terms of David Goggins, right? Like, in terms of reality, I think there's, if we practice doing challenging things, we get better at dealing with challenging or difficult things, right?
Yes.
Running is my vehicle that teaches me that. Like, it's my best teacher, beyond doubt.
Right.
Like, and you're a practiced ultra runner. What is it about the challenge of those things that appeal to you or give you that, or don't make you run away in the other?
For me, it's constantly stretching that envelope of self-belief. I do believe that, especially men, the older they get, their worlds quite often get smaller. And I am constantly trying to stretch that envelope to prove to myself that my world doesn't need to get smaller. And in fact, it can get wider and bigger and more wonderful. It's the challenge is entirely self-belief, I guess, self-confidence, achievement. So there's a lot in self-worth about completing something. Everyone's character is different, but I've got the kind of character that will constantly go, right, I've done that and I could do it again, but why not do something a little bit harder? And I'm sure at some point I'll come up against a genuine limiting belief, but until that day comes, I may as well keep stretching it. Like, I'm pretty confident in saying that I'm not going to do a 230-mile run at any point. Like, I'm not sure that I would enjoy that.
I mean, but, I would like to say I believe you. But,
you know, never say never, because I, 4 years ago, I said that what I'm doing now isn't possible and wouldn't be fun. And it is. I'm hugely looking forward to UTMB Snowdonia.
50 miles, right?
Say again?
50 miles.
It is something like that, yeah. I mean, I don't really know. I just get through it. But it's going to be, I would have never done anything like that. So to be able to look back and say, I've done that. And I think one of it, being a parent as well, is being able to say to your kids, I've done that. And you can go on to do things that seem impossible that you thought never possible before. Like, your own limit, there are limiting beliefs to some extent. I don't want to be one of those, like, American dads that say, you know, you can be anything you want, because, no, of course you can't. But you shouldn't limit, if you want to do something, you shouldn't be limited by that belief. At least give it a go.
Yeah. And I think that's super important. Like, being an example to those around you, you know, everybody has kids or family, but, you know, even proving it to yourself, like, being that example, like, showing people that, yes, there are difficult stuff, but it's totally doable and nothing bad happens. You know, even, like, what I like about running as well, like, ultra running and trail running, is sometimes they go terribly wrong.
Right, well, like, so,
and you fail at them. Like, I fail at running, only in my mind, a lot.
But that's a really interesting point you've touched on, that, because my last ultra run in June last year, I'd done 4 on the bounce in 4 months, and just because it seemed like, it was like, hey, this is going to be fun, and it was fun until it wasn't. And that wasn't so much a failure, but that it was called Race the Sun. It was a 50K, and I felt sick about 30 kilometres, and on and off that kept happening. It was really hot. But I walked a decent chunk of it, probably added about an hour to my time, right? And literally to this day, no one cares. I don't even know what my time was when I finished that. But what it did mean is that a load of other people caught up with me and started to chat to me, are you okay? And a load of people walked with me because they actually weren't feeling great and wanted to walk as well. So it was a good excuse for them to walk. And we made loads of friends off the back of that by walking huge chunks of that together. And we all finished it and it was wonderful. And I actually finished that race feeling better than any race that I've ever done. And again, time didn't care. I felt great. We had a wonderful time afterwards, drove home, lovely. Contrast that to the UK Ultra a year, 2 years before, something like that. And I'm the only person that is in mildly any way impressed that I managed to come top 50 men or some stupid arbitrary thing.
And now me.
I mean, it's like, what even is that? But yet, I felt awful at the end of that. I felt really sick for ages. And I'd much rather finish having walked a huge amount of it and feel great at the end of it. My target now for all races is to finish them feeling great.
That's a lovely ethos, actually.
Don't burn yourself out for another 20 places that no one gives a monkey's about. Finish feeling great.
Finish feeling great is a great way of it's a great mindset to have about this thing, about endurance anything.
That's my target. That is my ambition. That is my win. That is my victory. Do I feel great at the end of that? How do I get up the next day thinking, that was fun?
That's really good. I mean, again, this is one of those connections between the stuff we do outside and real life. If that was a mindset you had about everything, how can I finish my working week, my working day feeling great?
Oh.
Like, if you do right, that, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to finish their work and me thinking, yes,
what do you have to be? How do you have to do?
Yeah, like, I feel good. It's not necessarily the success or the victory or the money. It's the feeling great. Am I happy at the end of this week? Or have things gone well?
Do I finish this thing feeling great? Which is, a fabulous way, I think. Like a real good mindset thing. And part of the way... Like tenuous link alert, folks. Part of the way you feel great in ultra running is all about fuel and feed and eating.
The biggest tip ever. Yeah,
is eating. And Graham is a founder of Raw, which is an endurance fuel porridge. So let's finish by telling the good people about that. So what came first, Raw or the running?
Raw.
Where did that come from?
Right. So initially, way before lockdown, I say way before, like 6 months before lockdown, my little boy, I was walking again. I was outside with him a lot. I was hiking a lot. I did loads of the Chiltern Way and stuff with him in a papoose and everything else. Great fun. And we'd end up at places like pubs and various things. And there was naff all to eat. And I either had to be really organized and take stuff with me, which I enjoyed doing. But then you had loads of Tupperware, you had all sorts of junk with you, or you bought packets like the, Ella's things, whatever. But the packaging's really hard to recycle and loads of them are full of fruit sugars and things like that. Not added, but, and it just wasn't great. It was like croissants and things at cafes and things. And like, there's only so many you can start to give to them before you start feeling a little bit guilty about it. So I thought, this is nuts. Like, what would I eat? What would I want to have? Like before I go for a long walk or a porridge, whatever. You can't have that because you can't chew it. So I started milling it in like a Nutribullet. I started putting the oats into a Nutribullet, which basically creates ready break, instant ready break.
Nice.
And then I started researching then, what can I give him that he can't eat and how can I do that? So, nuts, walnuts, seeds, loads of seeds, flax seeds, they're various things. I started playing around with various combinations of it. And I knew enough about food science from working with food clients in the past to know that, how to kind of like test food out and start to write recipes down. I started playing around with it. We created a product which was delicious and we started selling it to baby groups and things. And then lockdown happened and I started getting parents messaging me going, this is also really good for me as well. I've started having it and I can share it with him. And then there were people that started doing running going, this is transformative. Like, have you any idea how powerful it is in terms of like running? Like, this is really good stuff. Like, it's way better than norm porridge because it's got all this other stuff in it. And I thought, maybe there's something in that. And so, we basically pivoted and thought, right, ditch the baby thing because it becomes complicated. You've got to be really careful about sieving everything within an inch of its life. And I started running, started eating them myself, going, bloody hell. Like, it made a big difference to my park run time. And I was thinking, all right, let's do this. Let's commit.
I've invented a thing.
And then, it's kind of gone on and on. And then obviously, yeah, Matt fueled his whole UK Ultra thing with it. And we now sell to a number of high-profile athletes and park runners and weekend warriors and hikers and people that want to be outside moving, where you can have it before or you can take it with you dry, doesn't weigh anything. And you can add some hot milk from a coffee shop. Yep. And you've got some instant endurance fuel that's whole food, right? Because, again, loads of it's filled with junk. There was absolutely nothing unnatural in it. And so, like, I basically realized that we'd created something which was the holy grail. It tasted good. It was convenient. And it was healthy. Like, that kind of trilogy never... Trilogy? Is that the right word? Yeah. That holy trinity of things never existed before, and we sort of stumbled into the perfect answer, really.
Yeah, and it's like learning to eat, like in this ultra and trail run, like learning to eat, like, because I only like to run when I was empty, only works for a very short amount of time,
right?
Then learning to eat after you've eaten, but then also learning to eat during,
and then afterwards as well. Basically.
Like, get used to such a difficult thing, but now when I go running with people who aren't, who do the odd run, they go like, "Are you eating a banana?" I'm like, "Yes." Why are you eating a banana? I don't know. It's been 30 minutes. I need some food.
Yeah. Have you any idea how much energy this is consuming?
Yeah. It's just fueling the thing. I'm like, how are you chewing stuff as you go? But anyway, but raw has been transformational. I eat raw before with either berries or banana and honey, which I like, or nuts extra. Yeah. In it, like, I can run without becoming hungry or notice to be depleted of fuel, which is a thing you get used to when you do long runs, for 2-2.5 hours without worrying. That's a lot of time.
It's a massive, like, it makes a big difference, because the longer you can not tap into your glycogen stores when you're running, the further you go. Hitting the wall, as it's called, is only because you've not eaten properly. That's the only reason you hit the wall. So if you can manage that glycogen depletion, and one of the ways to do that is eat whole foods. But the problem with whole foods normally is that they're difficult to digest. And so we create something that was whole food and easy to digest, then you can go for longer. Anything that you can take that's whole food that will allow you to go further during the runs, the better, basically. The less synthetics, the better. And we had a runner recently do the Arc of Attrition down on the South Coast there. And we supplied 100 miles, and we supplied her with a load of individual paper packets of it, because she wanted to be able to take them with her and eat them at aid stations as proper food. So that fueled her on that journey as well. And so it's lovely. It's nice to seeing people achieve great things and being able to eat and not have digestive issues and realise their own ambitions. I think that's one of the nicest things about this journey with Raw, is seeing people try it, realise it's nice, and then going, I've managed to do this great thing. If we could do more of that, that would make me very happy, basically.
That'd be good. And I'm sure there'll be, further chats on this podcast about Raw, about things that go up and open, that sort of thing. But it's a good... It's a good place to kind of round up, of that we can link to everybody to the Raw page. We've got a Raw Strava Run Club if people want to chip in and see how much we do or don't much.
And we've got more runs coming up, haven't we? I think we've got a Raw run in Bedford this Sunday. We're organising some Up Your Way in Leicester Derby soon as well. And we've also got a couple of races that we're going to be coming up, which are going to be fun. fun races. So not your normal ones, but fun races.
One of all the stuff that we've talked about. But if you want to come running with us in the future, then stay focused on the Instagram where this podcast will probably live, because it's that sort of people. LinkedIn people don't need this. It will be great. But Craig, thank you very much for coming on.
That's more than okay. Thank you.
It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for inviting me. And I'm just glad I got back from my very slow, short run in time.
That's all right. That's perfect timing.
I think I can wrap up the whole conversation in go slower, add distance bit by bit, don't worry about it, nobody else cares, enjoy it, and eat as much as you can possibly eat. Eat more. Eat more than you're eating now.
Eat more raw.
Just eat anything. Eat anything, but especially raw.
So that, ladies and gentlemen, was Graham Watson, a.k.a. TBD, which, if you know, you know. But I did very well not to refer to him as TBD through all that, which I've just ruined by doing that. But that was our first guest episode exploring how people get into trail running, like the little practices that are real good to help people use that as a vehicle, and my favorite vehicle for connecting with nature and getting outside, and understanding the power of kind of community and togetherness and belonging and habit stacking and daily practice has in becoming an outsider. Hope you enjoyed it. All the good stuff is in the show notes to follow Graham, Raw, etc. If you like this episode, share it with other people. I'll see you next time.